The Lollipop Guild only listens to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
You like music?
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues right here on WGXC. The show is a monthly roundup of new offerings from the worlds of psych, indie, jangle pop, experimental music, and folk, bolstered with enough classic fodder to make them stick.
That's what I'm talking about, man.
Tune in to Crawl Out from the Fallout every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
How can I say no to that?
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry, call us at 551-299-2456, check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org, or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Melinda of Catskill, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Amanda.
I'm Jenny.
I almost said Jenny.
I also for a second was like, what is my name? I'm not sure.
We are a twice a month radio talk show here on WGXC Accra every second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. Here from broadcasting from the Catskill studio right on Main Street.
It's so exciting. So nice to be here with you.
Always a pleasure, especially on this incredibly beautiful first day of spring weather.
Yep.
Not first day of spring.
We're getting close, so 10 days away. 10 days away.
Yes.
It's not bad.
It's true. It's true. I'm still waiting for the potential blizzard, but
oh, yeah. This feels like fall spring, but it's hard to not
Boy,
get your hopes
I
up.
Enjoying it,
it feels
driving
really
with the windows down. So we're a show where we pick a vague movie theme. It could be, or it could be as familiar or as unfamiliar as we want, but we pick a theme and then we watch movies around that theme and we get on the airwaves to talk about them. But before we talk about tonight's theme, we're going to tell you about what's playing in the theaters around these parts. And I'll start by telling you what's playing in the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. We have Mickey 17, Captain America, Brave New World, and Paddington in Peru.
Wow.
You can find out more by going to WyndhamTheater.com. That's WyndhamTheater.com.
All right. Now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at TSL, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited in Hudson. We have The Annihilation of Fish, The Seed of the Sacred Fig, yeah. Anora, The Empire, No Other Land, and The Girl with the Needle. Looks like they, as always, have lots of other things coming up. So if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at timeandspace.org.
Amazing. I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson. That's the 8-screen theater that's on Fairview Avenue in Hudson. We have Rule Breakers, Last Breath, The Monkey, Captain America, Brave New World, Dogman, Paddington in Peru, A Complete Unknown, Mufasa the Lion King, Mickey 17, Becoming Led Zeppelin, Black Bag, Novocaine, The Day the Earth Blew Up. It doesn't have a thumbnail for its poster.
Mysterious.
And that's all I see here. You can find out more by going to spotlighttheater.com and selecting the Hudson location from the drop-down menu.
All right, and now we're going to head over to Upstate Films, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have There's Still Tomorrow, Santosh, Picnic at Hanging Rock, huge news, The Bear, Dawn of Impressionism, Paris, 1874, No Other Land, Anora, Becoming Led Zeppelin, Hard Truths, and Every Little Thing. And then heading across the river to the Orpheum Theater in Saugerties, we have, oh, I can tell you about The Day the Earth Blew Up. It's a Looney Tunes movie. Oh. The Day the Earth Blew Up, colon, a Looney Tunes movie. We also have,
amazing.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, from the little thumbnail, it looks pretty cute. Yeah. There's also playing Black Bag, Blue Velvet, The Bear, Mickey 17, Becoming Led Zeppelin, Up with directors Damani Baker and Alex Vlack, the Jonas Deserts Quartet, live from Upstate. And, oh, the Twin Peaks Pilot, Northwest Passage.
Incredible.
And if you're interested in any of those movies or other various things that are happening and their showtimes, you can find out more information at upstatefilms.org.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, last but not least, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Story Screen Cinema in Hudson. That is also on Fairview Avenue, but it's the three-screen cinema that's near the Burger King. We have, starting March 14th, Mickey 17, Hard Truths, and No Other Land. We also, as usual, have a bunch of repertory screenings. We have Pink Flamingos and Desperate Living.
Amazing.
The Matrix, The Fugitive, and The Secret Garden, and a whole bunch more. You can find out more by going to storyscreenpresents.com.
Awesome. Lots of movies out right now.
I know.
It's March somehow. I know. Everybody's still putting out movies. It's so exciting.
Also getting the like post-Oscars trickle down where really it's nice. Like wasn't allowed to see it before. And yeah. Now we get to see No Other Land and Seed of a Sacred Fig.
That's so nice. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
Huge news.
Huge news. All right. So the movie. Well, okay. Well. Actually, no. I was one of the stars of Hard Truths.
Yes. Okay. That's where I was going to go to. I was literally going to be like, well, Hard Truth's a movie that I would like to see, but both because I heard it's great, but also because it stars Oscar snub, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who is the star of a movie that we watched for our show this week.
Yes.
Do you want to tell the people about our theme?
I do. So neither of us have gone to see the new movie that's not supposed to be very good, The Monkey.
It's true.
But it inspired us to pick the theme cursed objects, imbued objects, might you say.
Some could say. Haunted with something.
Yeah.
Unclear what. It could be anything.
Yeah.
But an object that you touch and something goes wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
Terrible apple.
Exactly. You got your classics. You got Christine.
Yep.
Cursed Car.
Yep.
And then I would think of like The Mask, frankly. A movie that also scares me.
It's haunting. It's truly haunting.
So I'm really excited to hear about what you watched.
Yeah.
Jenny and I don't tell each other what we watched before we get on the air. Because then it's more fun for us to surprise each other.
It's exciting.
It's very exciting. However, this episode, I think we kind of spilled our beans to each other.
Yeah, we got too excited. This is like a really fun theme for us. We also, longtime listeners know, we love scary movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't done a scary movie theme in months.
We haven't.
Weeks, maybe only weeks, but it feels like a long time.
Exactly. We have also seen a lot of, we try to watch movies that we've never seen before. And we've seen a lot of these movies.
It's true.
Except for two movies that I think we both watched, both about cursed red dresses.
Yes, what if a dress was so cursed? So the one that we were very casually referring to, starring Marianne Jean-Baptiste, is a movie from 2018 called In Fabric, directed by Peter Strickland. I really liked this movie.
This
I thought
movie
it was
fantastic.
Extremely fun.
I think for anybody who... It feels very, very British.
Yes.
And also very like, it's a horror comedy and it has like that super absurdist British humor. Like you have some of the familiar faces from things like The Mighty Boosh in it.
Yes, yes. Julian Barrett plays. There's like a lot of, it's very dry because also it's funny, but in this way that's very uncanny.
Mm-hmm.
It also to me felt like it was kind of doing like a little bit of a giallo pastiche.
Yes.
Where it's like everything's bright red. The soundtrack is like extremely synthy and vibey.
Yep.
The plot is kind of nonlinear in this way that's like really interesting and weird and like part of what makes it so uncomfortable. And then I think also this like British humor element to it also kind of, It adds to that where sometimes when you watch a giallo movie, it's like pretty melodramatic in a funny way.
Yeah.
And this feels like it's really leaning into that, where you're like, what's happening?
Yeah, it's like it's supposed to be very funny. Yeah, but exactly. You're totally right. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, like the conversational scenes that go on for too long.
Yeah. And like, what is going on? What are you guys even talking
perverse,
about?
Perverse. Like.
Yeah. Okay. We should talk about the plot of this movie before we go any further.
We should. All right. So Marianne Jean-Baptiste's character, Sheila. Works at a bank.
It is a bank, but yeah, it's a really weird bank.
It's a weird bank. Everything about this movie is weird. So first of all, it takes place in England, but also at a it has a really stylized time period, yeah. But it's also very vague. So it's all meant to look very 60s, like
totally
early mid 60s. But then there's some like later scenes.
Yeah. It's, where I was like, is it 1985? I'm not sure.
It's irrelevant. It just looks good.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. But Sheila is a single mom of a college age son who works at a bank. And there is a sale at the local department store that's being heavily advertised with a very tripped out kind of sexy ads on TV. And Sheila goes to the sale and is convinced by a recurring character of a very sexy, mysterious saleswoman
yes.
who has a thick foreign accent and speaks in riddles.
Yeah, she speaks as though that's the thing that really like made me be like, this is a giallo movie. It's like it's like when you watch Suspiria and everyone is speaking in a different language.
Yes.
And it's all being translated into something. Yeah. And you're not quite sure exactly what they're saying.
Like Jello's, where everyone is Italian.
Yeah.
or
some of them are German.
Yeah.
Like, but she is speaking in like poems, kind of.
Yeah.
Like everything she says is a riddle that is Sheila seemingly understands with no problem.
Yeah.
And like she reacts to them like there's like she's speaking
like it's
totally
a normal
normally,
conversation,
but she's like talking around a sentence. It's so
I know I wish
so
I could
good.
Think of a good example.
I know I should have written one down.
I know, but yeah, her like trying to sell this dress to Sheila by being like, oh, the experience of fabric against your
the experience is the moment.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, totally. And she's like sold.
Yeah, she's convinced to buy a red dress. And bad things very quickly start happening to her. She hears the dress flapping around in the closet, which is really kind of a fun, scary part of it.
Extremely fun.
Yeah,
this dress, we are never told precisely where it comes from.
Yeah.
Except that in this department store, the saleswoman is part of a league of other saleswomen who are
they're all mannequins
who came to life. They have a sort of witch energy about them where they're all wearing wigs and they're all wearing big dresses and they have nighttime rituals.
Yeah.
And there's also a very haunting man who also works there and likes to watch
Jenny,
them have their rituals.
Jenny, this is what made me love this movie, because I'm a gross creep.
It's so fun.
But yeah, the shop owner is like a bizarre like
A nasty
like,
man.
Unblinking old man watching these women like wash a mannequin.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's really, I mean, I was like, how do we even begin to describe this movie? And I think we're coming to the problem here is that it's like, it's sort of indescribable.
Again, the comparison to a giallo is perfect because it's a mood.
It's
look.
Vibes. It's vibes. It's like scene after scene where you're like, I'm not really sure how this connects to the previous scene, but
and then,
I'm engaged.
Yeah.
It's visually stunning.
Yeah.
It's thrilling to look at. And it is very funny. I was really surprised. Because whenever a movie is marketed to me as a horror / comedy, I'm like, am I going to laugh, though?
Yeah.
And I did. I laughed.
I
smiled.
Yeah, it
I smiled
great.
A lot during this movie.
I mean, not, again, like, the contemporaries who are doing this kind of comedy, English comedy, are like, I think about, like, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place,
yes.
which is, like, another thing that's paying homage to like bad daytime soapy
totally
doctor show like
yeah.
they're paying homage to a vintage type of
like melodrama.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
exactly.
Really, so there's kind of this with Sheila, she is also part of her story is that she's also like kind of recently divorced. And so she decides to start dating again. And part of her dating story is getting this dress and like going out and meeting new men. And the dress has desires that she doesn't necessarily have. And it's like, so she kind of starts to get haunted by this garment, which is, like Amanda said, flapping around in her closet at night. Sometimes it slips out of her room and into her son's room.
I forgot about Gwendolyn Christie.
Yeah, her son is having an affair with an older woman played by Gwendolyn Christie.
They're both in college, I think.
I think, well, he's studying for his A-levels, which I think you do when you're like 17.
Oh, yeah, it's confusing.
So I Googled it because I was like, how old are you for that? And he kind of looks like he's like in his 20s.
Yeah.
And he's kind of acting like he's in his 20s. Yeah. But it's very unclear. I mean, it's another part of this movie that's just like, it doesn't matter. Like,
but Gwendolyn Christie is so funny in this. Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Good. She's like a terrible, like, he's like an art student.
Yeah.
She's like horrible.
She's like
art girlfriend.
Yeah, she's kind of like his muse. She's always posing for him while he's drawing.
She's really rude to mom.
She's really rude to mom. And they, while they are engaging romantically, the dress slips out. And tries to strangle Gwendolyn Christie, which I was like, isn't, yeah. I just thought this dress wanted people to be having sex, but I guess it doesn't. It's very unclear.
That's the other movie we watched.
Yeah, God, you're so right. But yeah, the dress just causes destruction wherever it goes.
I know. And without revealing too much, like there's multiple vignettes in this movie and the dress does move on.
It does move on.
To its next victim.
And it's kind of a fun, I usually am not into a movie with vignettes, but I feel like we spend a lot of time with Sheila, probably for the first two thirds of the movie. And then we get kind of what happens to the dress as it continues through its dark journey.
Yeah. Also, okay, making a movie about a haunted object, challenging
it's
to not be silly,
challenging.
Right?
Yeah.
Beautiful shots of flowing fabric.
Totally. It's funny. Like
dresses well shot.
There are a couple of scenes where I like left my experience of the movie in a good way, where I was watching it being like, it's crazy that this is working, where you have a shot of like the dress floating at the top of a set of stairs and you're like, wow,
no, that's scary.
The dress is really scary.
That's really scary.
It looks great. Like it's such a well shot movie. I feel like it has such like, lovely use of color, a bright red silk dress, but with lots of in this kind of extremely well-lit department store that has other haunted objects seemingly in it.
It's like, so good.
It's a great flick. I really enjoyed In Fabric. I had basically no expectations because I was like, what's the deal with this movie?
Yeah, I'd been told about it by someone years ago and had been on my list since then, but I've never seen. Peter Strickland also did Burberry and Sound Studio, which I've never seen. But it's about a Foley artist who murders people to get the perfect sound.
Yeah, I know.
For giallos.
God, so good. Yeah. I mean, not dissimilar to Blowout.
Yeah.
I've never seen any of his other movies. The other one that I've heard great things about is The Duke of Burgundy.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have not seen. It's like it's time for me to get into Peter Strickland.
Peter Strickland, deep dive.
It's a hard tone to pull off. The, like, comedy that isn't silly. Like it's not silly at all. It just feels like fun and exciting. Like I was really surprised, not surprised, but I was just like, I was really like in it the whole time. Like I felt so compelled the entire time. I was compelled by the dress. I think the dress might have haunted me.
You could have said that I was haunted.
You might say In Fabric haunted me.
Do you want to dive right into the second movie that we both watched?
You feeling dangerous tonight?
Jenny and I both separately wound up finding out about a 1990 made-for-TV movie starring Madge and Amick of Twin Peaks fame called I'm Dangerous Tonight.
It's such a good name for a movie. It's like unbelievably good.
I know.
It's directed by Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
My partner was like, oh yeah, I know about that movie because it's a restoration that was put out by Kino Lorber, which I had never heard of, but it's another like restoration and distribution company kind of like Criterion. But they started by doing like international films and then I think have done a bunch of restoration of kind of like TV movies and like weird special interest stuff.
Yeah.
And so when I asked him about it, he's like, oh yeah, like I've always wanted to see that. And I was like, that's crazy. Yeah. You've always wanted to see
Never
this.
Never in my
made
life.
For TV movie by Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
Called I'm Dangerous Tonight.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know who might be listening, Toby Hooper got his got his stripes from making the best horror movie ever made, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Also featured on our fair episode where I talked about the Funhouse.
Yeah.
a couple months ago.
Well, he's one of those ones who like
he made a lot of movies.
Like Wes Craven, you know, famous for a reason. Yeah. Also made a lot of really bad movies.
Yeah. But all the ones I've seen of his were fun. I always had a good time.
Yeah.
Including I'm Dangerous Tonight.
Yeah. Which was great fun.
Is essentially a really long X-Files episode.
Yeah.
Which is why I really liked it.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely
so fun.
Also, like, I'll watch Mad Genomics.
Literally
perfect
do anything.
Face for...
She's so lovely. Let's talk about I'm Dangerous Tonight. All right. The plot. It's all right. Let's get down to business.
Okay.
An ancient Aztec cloth is found inside of an ancient tomb, which has been imported to a college somewhere. I feel like they're in California, but it's maybe not clear.
Who knows? The museum director of the museum on this college campus has a particular interest in, getting this relic delivered to the museum, which is a sacrificial altar. Aztec sacrificial altar, which inside of it has
a sacrificial cloth, a cape, you might say.
Another red silken garment.
Yeah, which is untouched by time. Which immediately, so this altar is brought into a wonderfully lit warehouse, garage entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's the historian or something? What, he works
in
the museum?
Yeah, I think of him, he's like the museum director.
Yeah, the museum director is very excited about this, and so he immediately gets to work on getting the altar open.
Mm.
But little does he know, once the altar opens, this haunted cloth will emerge, and he will touch it, and he will lose his mind.
As soon as you touch this garment...
it drives you mad.
What do we eventually end up toward the end of the movie? It amplifies...
What's inside
within
of you. Yes. So if you have any darkness within your heart, you will become... Yeah. A dark person who will commit dark acts.
I also forget. We'll get into it, but this movie is truly, actually, bizarrely star-studded.
It is Anthony Perkins,
and Dee Wallace.
And Dee Wallace, it's so
who
fun.
Becomes the actual villain of the movie.
God,
it's wild.
It's so good. All right. Such a weird movie.
So Mad Genomic is living with her. She's kind of a bit of a Cinderella character.
Yeah.
She's living with her bratty cousin and aunt. After her parents have passed away, she's there. Her grandmother also lives with her, who she primarily takes care of. The other ladies in the house are supposed to be lifting the weight as well, but they do not. And she's just a beautiful sweetheart with truly an inspiring wardrobe to me.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible
God,
sweaters.
Every time. I was like, the fits go so hard.
Incredible
she
sweaters.
She looks amazing.
She's a college student at the same college where the garment arrived at the museum. She meets a cute boy who coaxes her into like doing prop collecting for the stage production that he's in of Romeo and Juliet. And at an estate sale, she buys a trunk. And what's inside the trunk? But the Aztec.
That very cloth. Same cloth. Because the museum director went mad and
murdered his family.
And then the estate sale is all of his stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Mad Genomic is really a people pleaser, so she starts saying yes to literally everything, which is such, I mean, I honestly, like, kind of a fun character trait. Like, I felt like she was really well drawn.
She's
like,
relatable.
Oh, yeah, totally.
She's, like, too nice.
Totally.
But not in a way that felt like an unbelievable character.
No, not
she's
at all.
Just a helpful person.
She's, yeah, so she starts collecting these props. She finds this red cape and brings the entire, like, the trunk and the cape to the stage, to the, auditorium. That's like, what do you call that? Where do people do these things?
The cute boy throws it on. He's playing Mercutio in the school Romeo and Juliet production. Throws it on. Immediately gets real violent.
Extremely
with his
aggressive.
Castmates.
Yeah.
So this, and she knows. Mad Genomic Amy, her character's name is. She knows. When she touches it, she feels it too. And even though she's a extremely pure person, this garment seeps its way into her and she takes it home. And she makes it into a really sexy dress because she's a seamstress.
Yeah.
She wears the dress out to a dance where her cousin and her cousin's hot boyfriend are. The dress, like, has full control of her. She's dancing all sexy. she seduces the football player boyfriend. And when he takes the dress off when they're hooking up, she's like, what's going on?
She's like, whoa.
So she figures it out. She figures it out really fast that the dress is no good.
Yeah.
Got to get rid of the dress.
This movie has like a really interesting relationship with consent, actually. It's like, it's kind of, it's, I don't know that it's like good, but it is, it's interesting.
Made for TV 1990.
There's a lot to unpack here. Yeah. Because when somebody's wearing the dress, they're acting differently. So it's like, what is the, it's, I don't know. I was just thinking about that while I was watching it. I was sorry.
No, don't.
I simply had to bring it up.
Being a critical thinker.
Sorry. Don't be. I'm so sorry.
Her naughty cousin steals it.
Yep.
After she realizes that everyone kind of knows what's up with this dress.
I think her cousin just thinks the dress is hot.
It's true.
And she's like,
and her boyfriend was like into Amy.
Yeah, totally. While she's wearing the dress. Yeah.
Cousin steals it. Cousin, kind of a corrupt heart on that one.
Yep.
So
she kind of looks like Christine Baranski, which I really
like. I don't know who that is.
We'll talk about it later.
I thought she was like a soft Feruzabalk.
Yeah, that is also true. Yeah. Very much a soft Feruzabalk.
Yeah.
She takes the dress, puts it on to, because she thinks that her boyfriend's going to propose to her for some reason, but it turns out he's actually just been drafted into the NFL and his life's about to change forever, and he's like, bye babe,
we'll stay in touch. Gonna be with the Chiefs.
Yeah, but she after having this conversation touches the dress while she gets out of bed and is suddenly consumed again by her anger and her hatred.
Yeah.
And what does she do but
murder him and then come after Amy. Yep. And her boyfriend next,
totally,
who narrowly escape, and the cousin burns up in a fiery car crash, but the dress,
you know, it doesn't burn up.
No. The dress survives, and who should take it but Dee Wallace, who we're led to believe is a truly corrupt person. Yeah. Who works as a secretary at the morticians.
Yeah. She just like works in the morgue. Yeah. And she steals the dress and goes on a killing spree.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a funny, this movie is like, I really enjoyed it. The pacing is unhinged.
Yeah,
because
no,
like,
it's like
the entire first whatever 2/3 is all of the stuff with Amy and her cousin and her family and her like kind of figuring out that this dress is evil. Yeah. And she's also, Anthony Perkins plays her psychology professor.
Yeah, we have to get to Anthony Perkins.
So she, the reason that she meets this cute boy who's playing Mercutio in the play is that they are randomly assigned to write a paper together on this book that was written by the guy who brought the Aztec altar to the college in the first place, the museum director.
Yeah.
Which is obviously, of course, a book about objects being having power.
Anthony Perkins runs into Madge Dynamics character Amy on a jog, and he's like, have you gotten to that chapter of the book you've been assigned yet? Perhaps the one about objects having power, like
dresses, for example.
Talismans or dresses.
For example. Just like spitballing here. It's so, his character is so funny.
It's so,
like, he just keeps running into her being like, so have you thought about that dress at all?
Yeah.
Like, just wondering.
This movie really like occupies a funny space in like lower budget horror. Yeah. Like, it has a real made for TV feel, but it's slightly better. It's extremely watchable.
Totally.
So it almost feels like one of those like early aughts teen slashers.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like an urban legend or
totally.
something, which like is also a not great movie, but it's a great movie.
Yeah. And also, like, it looks really great. Like, I don't know if it was shot on film or if it's just like really good digital, but it looks really
it
great
looks
like
excellent.
There's so many shots where I'm like, like so many night shots of the front of her house that I'm like, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, why does this movie look so good?
But also there's like not much there.
No, it's so, I mean, it's such a chaotic, like, the script is so chaotic. Oh, that's what I was saying, was that like, so the entire first 2/3 is her working on this paper, figuring out that this dress is evil, but like still being really like wanting to wear it, wanting to imbue, like wanting to have this power because she is so powerless in her daily life. And then suddenly the last third is just about Dee Wallace becoming like a serial killer wearing the dress. Who, like, we have not met before this time.
Nope. Dee Wallace is also having an amazing time.
She really is.
It's so fun to watch her in this because you're like, She's horror royalty. She's Cujo mom.
Yep.
She's E.T. mom.
She's E.T.'s mom. Yeah, totally. She's E.T.'s mom. That's not quite the right thing to say. But
no, like, you know, But she's having a great time.
Yeah,
this is like later in her career, technically, kind of.
It's great. Yeah, this dress is cursed. So the other thing that we learned from Anthony Perkins, who is just, again, popping up occasionally to talk to Amy about her paper and be like, so just wondering, like, do you know anything about this dress? And then he decides to tell her that what we have learned from watching the movie, that the dress amplifies the darkness within. But if a person is pure of heart, they can harness the power of the dress and maybe destroy it.
Yeah.
And so we learned from that clearly that Amy is the only person who has this power, who is able to resist the dress.
She's really nice.
Yeah, she's so nice.
She's a really nice girl.
And so the climax of the film is really she gets home. At this point, her grandma has died. Her cousin has died. Like, it's been terrible. She finds her aunt now dead, murdered by D. Wallace, the serial killer, who is now wearing the dress and is after her because she knows that Amy wants it back and wants to get rid of it. And so they have a confrontation. There's this, do we talk about the surprise twist, I guess? It's not really a twist.
Yeah, I mean, the nice boy is like, I saw you in that dress that one time, and like, I know it has powers, and like, think what we could be together.
He, from wearing the cape one time, he has become totally corrupted by the dress. And so he is the one who tries to take her down in the end.
Yeah.
But she manages to get it off of herself and throw it into a wood chipper. Destroy the dress.
And then, I mean, the real twist.
The real twist.
The little, I mean, it really is like a long
X-Files episode. It's just a long X-Files episode.
Okay, like, there's a lot of movies that are so great that are like, have you ever seen Disturbing Behavior?
Yes, of course. I love also a long X-Files episode, 100%. It's
literally written by one of the X-Files regular writers.
That's why it's so good.
It's so good. Anthony Perkins, as we all knew, for the entire runtime of this movie, that like tall, gaunt, creepy professor who knows a lot about this dress, he goes and finds those dress shreds and stuffs them in his jacket, fade to black.
Yeah. What's he going to do with it? God, it's so fun.
Yeah, it was a great time.
I loved it. There's a scene where they do a title drop where when Amy's cousin finds the dress in her closet, after Amy has been like, I got rid of it, it's not here anymore. And she's like, yeah, right. And she finds it, puts it on, looks in the mirror and says, I'm dangerous tonight.
It's amazing. It's really good.
It's so good. Yeah. It's just a great time. It's really fun. It's just like a totally solid, like, my one critique is that it's a little too long because it's very like.
It doesn't need to be as long as it is.
And if it was just an episode of The X-Files, I'd be like, that's, oh my God, one of my favorite episodes. The one with the haunted dress.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, that's why we pick these themes.
Yeah, because they're so good.
They're so fun.
They're so fun.
Again, like, hard to make a haunted object movie that you take seriously.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if you're there to have fun, like, even like Chucky, you know, of course, like, yes, I know, on paper, the plot of that movie is a serial killer puts his soul inside of a doll.
Totally. But I'm having a great time.
In reality. Yeah.
It is.
It's,
I mean,
really good.
I am also always surprised is not the right word. Like, I love how it's obviously a very tropey genre. You know, the object appears, it starts hurting people, and it progresses from there. I kind of love when we don't know why the object is evil.
Yeah.
Like, the Aztec cloak is like, okay, yeah, sure, totally. Like, you're telling me it was involved in sacrifices. But, like, the dress from In Fabric, we're just kind of like,
it's, like, belonged to a model who died.
Yeah.
And that's all we know, and that's fine.
And that's fine. And it's kind of, like, I always really liked that about movies like Oculus, too, where it's like, I don't know why that mirror is so evil. It just is. It's just really mean.
Oculus is a movie from, I don't know, what was it, like, 2013 or something?
Yeah, totally.
About a haunted mirror.
Yeah.
An evil mirror.
A mirror that just, like, makes people so do bad things.
And if you have, like, an incredible art director or whoever, like, that mirror is so scary.
It's really scary looking.
It's in like a horrible
frame. It scares me sometimes to Google it and look at it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
If you have someone who's picking up, I mean, even like the real life supposed haunted things that we know about, like the famous doll,
Robert the doll, who's like
horrible looking doll.
Yeah, totally. It just sucks to look at him. Yeah. I don't want to do it. That doll is haunted 100%. Do you own any objects that you think might be haunted?
Oh my God, I had a really similar question.
I knew you would. I was trying to beat you there.
I don't want there to be dead air while I think about it.
Okay, I can tell you about something that I have.
Okay.
I actually didn't even realize it until a couple of years ago. My sister was coming to visit me near Halloween, and I remembered that I owned this thing, and it was at my parents' house, and I was like, can you bring it to me? And she was like, I don't want to touch it. It's a necklace that I have. I don't remember who I bought it from. It was definitely like some random artist online, which I think is part of why, and it was over a decade ago, so that has... Now it feels even more cursed to me.
Yeah.
It's just a little necklace that's like a little silver plate that has a mouse heart on it.
I remember.
You know, my mouse heart necklace.
Yeah.
But I kind of don't even think, I for a while wasn't thinking about it like it was a cursed object until I texted my sister and was like, oh, can you bring that to me? And she was like, I don't think you should have this. She's like, what is this? Why do you own it?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't have it. It does feel... It doesn't feel evil to me, but
no,
it is.
It's
when you look upon it, you're like, hey, what is that?
I had a similar thing where, maybe this isn't like even a story for the public, but it's fine. We're here. In college, a chickadee hit our window and died, and I taxidermied it.
Yeah, of course.
because I'd never done that, and I wanted to try it.
Yeah.
And I had its head for a really long time, and I finally, I don't know, 4 years ago was like, this is enough.
It's time to say goodbye.
So I'm going
to
bury this with some salt
in
the park.
To. Yeah, you can't just get rid of it. You have to send it away.
Yeah.
It's the only way.
I know.
Yeah. I'm sure we have other cursed objects in our life, but I was like, if there's anything, you know, it's always one that floats right to the top of your head where you're like, I shouldn't have that.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have that anymore.
Shouldn't be mine.
Yeah.
I know. I'm trying to think of other ones because I've definitely like gotten rid of things that were like,
I don't need that anymore.
I shouldn't have this.
I shouldn't have this. Can I tell you about another movie I watched?
Please, for the love of God.
I watched this really fun, also made for TV movie, which is why when you started alluding to I'm Dangerous Tonight the other day, I was like, is this what she's going to say? It's a movie called Whistle and I'll Come to You.
Oh, Jenny, I've told you. Okay. I love that movie.
Have we
you
talked
know,
about it?
No, it's part of Ghost Stories for Christmas.
Yes, it is part of, yes.
The BBC, sorry.
Yeah. Yes, it game. Is part of, okay, that's what I thought because I know that there's a remake of it from 2010 that is with John Hurt, which I also haven't seen and I didn't watch for this because I've heard it's interesting, but not in a way, that is like not appealing to me kind of.
Yeah.
Like it's a reinterpretation of the story.
I am so happy you watched.
It's so good.
All right. So for those of you who don't know, it's a British tradition to tell a ghost story at midnight on Christmas. and the BBC did it start in the late 60s? Is like
this
68
This one's from 68, I think. So yeah.
I think it's from late 60s to like mid 70s. The BBC on Christmas at midnight aired part of a series called A Ghost Story for Christmas. That was like a short film. They're pretty long. Like,
this is 40 minutes. It is also Whistle and I'll Come to You. It got grouped in with that, but it actually initially aired as part of a documentary series, which is insane to me because I'm like, who? That would scare me so much.
So much.
It was also,
I mean, the BBC is great at that. Ghost Watch.
God, it really is. It was the British documentary series Omnibus. And like most of the other episodes are like actual documentaries about like usually about somebody in the arts or like some, you know, something related to film or art or whatever. But they decided to do this one and then it gets grouped in with the Christmas. Was it called
Ghost Stories for Christmas?
Ghost Stories for Christmas, because it is obviously not a, it's not a documentary,
no.
But it has this framing at the beginning that kind of introduces it as though it's going to tell you about something that's real.
Yeah.
Which adds to the mystique in a way that's really fun. I loved it. There are some things about it that I, you know, anyway, well, let me tell you about it.
Tell me about it.
So, but you've seen it.
Yeah, but tell me
about it. I'm going to tell you about it anyway. So it's an adaptation of a ghost story written by M.R. James, which the story is called A Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad, which is like also pretty, it's not as creepy as Whistle and I'll Come to You. Yeah. Whistle and I'll Come to You is like such a haunting phrase. But
when you throw lad on the end,
yeah, then it's
really
less creepy. So I understand why they dropped that part. But it's about a professor who goes on a vacation to an English seaside town, kind of in the off season. So he's kind of alone in this hotel with a couple of other people, wandering about the beaches and on these kind of empty days. He's very fussy. He's like he's like a caricature of a British person, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah.
It was very funny for me.
Yeah.
And while he's going on one of his lonesome beach walks, he's also very like he whistles to himself. He's like very kind of uncaring. He does not believe in the supernatural, as we find out throughout this short film. He kind of decides to walk through some graves and finds a whistle made out of a bone and decides to pocket it because he's like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Just like takes it with him.
Yeah.
And as he's walking back to his hotel.
Oh my gosh, I actually haven't seen this one.
You haven't?
I've seen most of the other ones. Yeah, keep going.
It's great,
I'm excited.
Dude. It's so good.
That's what I hear.
He.
Oh, sorry. Hello. Really quick.
We have
our
some
buddies.
Guests out of the window. Hello.
Yeah. I know. That's a real treat of having your show on the window side
in the Catskill studio. It's so exciting. Hi, you guys. Love
Get
you
to
guys.
See your buddies.
Wow. Such a pleasure.
Good night, guys.
less haunting than what happens to this guy. So he pocks this whistle. Professor Parkins is his name. Oh my God, they're so cute. And as he's walking back to the hotel, you kind of see what looks like a figure standing behind him on the beach in this way that he kind of like glances behind him, but doesn't really think that much of it. But you, the viewer, are like, what did you do?
Yeah.
What have you done?
Yeah.
What have you done?
Yeah.
And so he goes back to his hotel. He like has his little dinner. He has a little bath every night. And then decides to investigate his whistle because he's like, oh yeah, I forgot that I had this. He like finds it in his pocket, pulls it out. It's full of dirt. So he cleans it. And then he sees that there's an inscription on the whistle and he takes a rubbing of it so that he can read it. It's in Latin and it says, who is this? Who is coming?
Oh my God.
Which
no,
to me,
I have, I literally have chills. I got goose pimples on my arms right now.
Actually sickening.
I know.
I looked it up because I was like, what does the whistle say? And I read it and went like, whoa. Like,
got sick to your stomach.
It's terrible. So he cleans the whistle. He reads the inscription. He's like, huh, interesting. And then blows it because he's just a lunatic. He has like no fear. Like, okay. So he blows the whistle. It gets a little stormy outside. And he's like, irrelevant.
Fine.
Irrelevant.
Yeah.
Whatever. Goes straight to bed.
God, I wish. Can you imagine not having anxiety like that?
I simply can't. He is like, he has no care in the world. It's
yeah.
like truly just like, huh, what a funny object.
Yeah.
That's so weird. He kind of doesn't sleep well, but he doesn't think anything of it. And then the next morning at breakfast, one of the other people at the hotel decides to talk to him about ghosts, I guess because he's been wandering around in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And they have like an unbelievably British argument about it where mm-hmm. he takes umbrage with like the grammatical way that we talk about ghosts, where he's like, do we even agree what a ghost is? And then like, you know, just is such a like fussy,
yeah,
fussy
like
baby,
fuddy
about
duddy,
it. Yes, like
absolutely,
absolute, and is absolutely like, huh, it's silly that you would even think of such a thing. Goes out on his walk again to the beach, you know, eats a little apple on the beach. It's actually like such a lovely picnicking movie because he's always like hanging out.
In those British seaside towns.
God,
are.
Lovely. Absolutely stunning. Nothing happens. He just wanders around. He does his little walk. He goes home. He has his little bath. In bed that night, he has a dream. And this is the best part of the movie. He has a dream where he's on the beach again, but something is chasing him. And he can't see what it is, but he's running because he's very scared. And he hides behind a wall and looks up and there's this mysterious, it almost looks like a billowing piece of fabric, but it's
more fabric.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, just like in fabric. but it's shot in this way. I don't know if it's stop motion or what, but it looks, honestly, it reminded me a lot of the dream sequence at the end of, the Prince of Darkness.
Oh yeah.
Which is my favorite part of that movie, the John Carpenter movie, which ends with a dream sequence of a person seeing a figure on steps that is like very uncanny.
Yep.
And frightening.
Yeah.
This is very like, it's just, it doesn't look the same, but it has a really similar energy of like, you're not quite sure how they filmed it, and it's 1968, so you know that it's a practical effect, but it just is very haunting to
yeah.
look at. And he wakes up. And he's like, oh, that was really weird. I don't know what's going on. Goes about his day. The maid comes to him and is like, hey, which bed should I make? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, and she says, both of the beds in your room were slept in last night.
No.
And he's like, what? That's weird. I only slept in one of them. And she's like, well, they're both rumpled. I don't know what to tell you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Very haunting. Ooh. Don't like it. Ooh. He goes to the beach again because mm-hmm. he's like, you know what? It's fine. I don't believe in ghosts. No such thing.
Yeah.
He passes another day just wandering, doing his little beach thing. I think he's definitely a little edgier because he hasn't slept well. But it's fine. He goes back to his room that night. He gets in his bed. He's nervous. He doesn't know why. In the middle of the night, he's having a hard time falling asleep. But when he finally does, he wakes up to the sound of something moving in his room. And there's somebody in the other bed. And that's pretty much it. That's kind of the whole movie.
Okay. That is... all of the ghost stories for Christmas that I've seen are some of the scariest things I've seen in a long time. Because they you and I get freaked out in a very similar way. And they're just like, they have such an incredibly wise light touch as far as like,
absolutely.
Like the reason I thought that I'd seen Whistle and I'll Come to You is because there's another one called A Warning to the Curious, which starts very similarly. And it's like a British dude goes to a seaside
town. Always doing that.
And it's because there's a famous legend. He's an archaeologist and like kind of like a shady one. Like he's a little bit more of like a treasure robber, whatever.
A La
Primera type. Yeah. And there's local lore about there's a ancient crown like buried in these dunes somewhere in this town that protect like its existence is said to have always protected the town from like, you know, centuries of war. Mm-hmm. And like, he, through various like talking to locals and digging in archives, he finds where it is. And also immediately, it's been protected by the same family for generations. Ooh. And he immediately starts seeing down the beach a dark figure.
Oh God.
Yeah.
It's just such, I mean, it's such an effective image.
Yeah.
It's so,
they're so good.
The thing about Whistle and I'll Come to You is that it's like, I think the ending feels a little abrupt to me, but in a way that I wasn't upset by at all. And like, I think the characterization of the professor is, it's like a little too much for me. I read a review of it that was like, it's a perfect, you know, he's a great character and the performance was like really well received. And I'm like, totally. I think it reads a little bit different here in 2025 than in 1968. Like it just feels, he is such a caricature of a person. That being said, like in a lot of horror movies, when somebody's kind of annoying, you're like, can't wait for the ghost to get him.
Yeah.
But it's such a simple premise of like blowing a whistle and something scary happens, and like it's never really explained. We don't know where that bone came from, that bone whistle. We don't know who is it, who is coming. We don't know.
I don't want to know. I know. Like, there's
so scared. That's what's so frightening about it.
I know. And so many, I mean, as we know, movies are always scarier or more effective when we don't know too much.
Exactly.
Like I don't need to see the whole monster even.
Totally. Or just a little taste. Yeah. And it's such an effective movie. I thought about watching the one from 2010 with John Hurt, but because there's something about older movies that do scare me more usually. Mm-hmm. Not always. Like I was actually just talking to a friend of the show Anne about this, where sometimes it's easier to watch horror movies that are older because they are they're a little less quote unquote believable. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit of remove, but also they often feel more like cursed objects.
They do like, themselves.
Yes, absolutely. The movie itself feels like you're watching something you shouldn't be watching. You're like, exactly. I shouldn't be seeing this.
Well, and I think too, like, those limitations of effects, because you literally can't show that much.
Exactly.
Like especially when you're like made for the BBC,
totally,
like your budget is like
minuscule. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't reveal everything because you actually literally can't find a way
you
to show it.
Yeah. Or you do not have the technology. Yeah.
Exactly. So you're like, you have to come up with a lot more creativity and also like put all the fear in like the acting between characters and like the suggestion of situations.
Exactly. And, yeah. Yeah, it was so fun. Actually, the movie we were talking about with that was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which she hasn't been able to watch because she's a little scared of it, which I understand.
I understand.
Like, it's a really scary movie.
Well, and it's also kind of the opposite outcome of what I'm talking about.
Right.
Like, the budget was really low.
Yeah.
So everything is like as real as it can be.
Right.
It's like animal guts and like real bones, and everyone was wearing the same costume for the entire shooting, and everyone smelled terrible, and it was hot as hell.
It feels like that. Like, it feels like a really cursed object to be watching.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is something that makes it one of the best slashers of the best slasher of all time.
Yes, absolutely.
It's that viscerality.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh my God. We're so like, wow. Mm-hmm. It's such a fun, this is such a fun theme. I want to do it again. There's
I
so
too,
many movies.
There's so many movies
that I wanted to watch.
Some of the other ones on your list.
Some of the other ones on my list. It's such a good question. Oh, the one that I actually meant to watch last night, but I decided to do I'm Dangerous Tonight instead, is a movie from 1958 called I Bury the Living.
Jesus.
Which is about
Jesus Christ.
It's about a haunted map.
What?
Is that fun?
That's so
cool. I know. I really want to watch it. It's like about a guy who finds a map somewhere. I think he manages a cemetery. And he believes that he is accidentally killing people by like tampering with a map.
Wow.
And then he has to like prove it to people, I guess. That's what the summary says.
I haven't watched it.
But it sounds really fun.
I was going to watch Stay Tuned, which I've never seen.
Yes, I also want to watch Stay Tuned.
Which is about a guy who buys a satellite dish and it's like got a 666 channels or something. And he gets sucked into the TV.
Yes. I love haunted TV channels.
Haunted cable.
So funny to me. Yeah. Haunted cable. It's so good. I know. I also have that on my list.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing I put on my list that you recommended to me that I'm really excited to watch is Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2.
Okay, so it's the
Let's
third haunted dress
bit.
Movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a really long time.
But tell me more anyway.
So
tell me everything that you remember.
I feel like a lot of times when... So this movie has nothing to do with the original Prom Night, which is just kind of a by-the-book slasher. Jamie Lee Curtis, Somebody's Killing Students. It's... Prom Night's like not that great.
Yeah, totally.
But it like made kids wanted to see slashers. It made decent money. So this I forget who made Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2, but
I can tell you
they were able to get a foot in the door by being
Bruce
like,
Pittman.
Sure. I'll make Prom Night 2, but it has nothing to do with it. It just also has a prom in it.
Totally.
But from what I can recall, again, somebody, maybe Mary Lou is like a former like evil prom queen who died, but somebody finds her dress and wears it to prom and becomes possessed.
It's so good. What's better than a haunted dress?
I know.
So good.
Haunted garments.
Have a great time.
Kind of thing. I mean, like, they're not haunted, but I mean, okay. So there's the brief shot of in fabric where there's text in the hem.
Oh,
obviously.
Thought about Phantom Thread?
Of course. Yeah. About
Which, because I was thinking about that anyway, because it says never cursed on the dress.
Oh,
yeah, because he sews inscriptions into not all of the clothing.
Well, that's exactly what I thought about it, but I forgot that it's.
I'm
like
pretty sure
cursed.
It's one of Alma's dresses says "never cursed," which is maybe. I was thinking about it because when I was Googling stickers for our post. I was looking at cursed and I was like, oh, never cursed, but it didn't come up anyway.
Damn.
Irrelevant.
Damn.
But a Phantom Thread, the best movie about a dress.
It's
not really about a dress, but
never seen any version of A Picture of Dorian Gray.
Picture
of Dorian Gray. Which
I haven't either.
Counts?
I've read it. Yeah, definitely.
Right?
It's a haunted painting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because it keeps him young, right?
I've always wanted to watch the one, I think it's from the 50s, with like the really nasty painting in it.
Yeah, there's supposed to be one that's like the best.
The best one, yeah. I've read it, but I've also never seen an adaptation of it.
Well, the other movie that I watched was Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
I forgot you did tell me that.
Because I hadn't watched it in a long time.
Honestly, it's a broad
My partner doesn't
genre.
Really like scary movies.
He's like, I don't want to watch it.
He was like, what about this? This has a cursed gold
in
it.
Can we do this instead? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that anything can be cursed. And it's such a wide-ranging genre.
Well, you know what else is cursed? Jumanji.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. You can't play
it's
that board game. 100%. Wow.
fruitful.
No, I mean, like, it makes fruitful. Great horror movies, but it also makes great family movies.
Yeah, 100%.
Again, The Mask.
A cautionary
tale. To
me, a
horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, you're
to
right.
To many, a beloved family movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is also fully a horror movie. I think you're absolutely correct.
It's horrible. So
it's
scary.
Don't put that
I really
mask
don't
on.
I like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is huge. I can't wait for the squeakquel. It's going to be so great when we watch more haunted objects.
Exactly. I also can't wait.
Yeah.
Is it time?
It's, I mean, we got a couple minutes left. Is there anything that you, anything else you've seen recently that you feel excited about or any other movies that you are feeling interested in watching?
You've probably watched something better than I have. The other thing I watched was Independence Day Resurgence.
Is that the one that just came out? By 4 years ago or something.
I didn't really watch it.
Yeah.
Like, let's put something on the TV while we do chores.
Totally. So. I mean, I watched the new movie Mickey 17, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I went to see Mickey 17. I loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
It's extremely fun. I really love that Bong Joon-ho makes, like, really kooky, kind of, like, poppy American movies.
Yeah. And I was going to say, did that ring true after you saw it?
100%. Where, yeah, like, absolutely.
He's like, you guys can have Snowpiercer.
Yeah. You can have Parasite.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah. At home.
At home. Yeah. You guys can have... whatever
Mickey
the hell
17,
this
yeah.
is. You can have Okja.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still haven't seen Okja, but I hear it's great. But Mickey 17 is very fun. I mean, it's a lot funnier than Snowpiercer, which is not really a funny movie.
Well,
and it's also really romantic. It's got like a central romance. It's really lovely. I thought it was great. I had a great time.
Yeah.
Went to see a matinee.
I know.
Huge.
Oh.
It was done by like 3 p.m. It's awesome.
It's a lovely. I know.
It's great. We were talking
about midnight showings before we got on air, which I do miss, but also I love to go to bed.
It's so nice. You have the whole rest of the day left after you see a matinee.
I
like went and did another thing. It was amazing.
In the cold weather was the right time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Now sun's out. I want to be outside.
Yeah. Now I'm ready to go to a movie at 8:30.
Exactly. It's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only other like really exciting movie that I watched that I had never seen before is I did watch The Straight Story for the first time. Did I tell you that?
No.
We didn't talk about it. Amanda.
Okay. All right. Listen, everybody.
Last 3 minutes. We're talking about The Straight Story.
The Straight Story is the movie that David Lynch did with Disney that is based on a true story about Alvin Straight, who is a man who went to go visit his ailing brother on a riding mower because he was too old to have a license. And he crossed, like, what, 3 states?
Yeah. Like, a zillion states.
It is
so lovely.
It's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
It's a standout Lynch movie because the surrealism is dialed way, way, mm-hmm. way, way back.
Yeah.
But it still has his, like, deep and pure understanding of love.
Mm-hmm. Like, hugely sincere.
Yeah.
Hugely loving. Our mutual friend Ellen texted me after she saw that I'd watched it and said, "Are you crying?" And
yeah.
I said, "Oh, if Harry Dean Stanton's crying, I'm crying."
Yeah.
Yes, 100% yeah. I'm crying.
The scene in the bar with the other veteran,
it's great.
Yeah.
Strong
my dad
recommend.
Used to never cry. That movie made him cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful
it's
movie.
It's beautiful.
It does. Yeah. Again, it's like, I would never recommend it as like a, like, this is what David Lynch's stuff is usually
right.
like. It's very standout. But I know we've compared it before to, like I think the best Tarantino movie is Jackie Brown.
100%.
But that's, like, a standout.
Not, it's different from his other ones.
It's my favorite because it's...
It's different.
It's, like...
Because it's more sensitive. It's so, it's so sweet. Like, I do... I mean, we're the same. We're soft.
Yeah.
We love the sweet ones.
Yeah.
And, yeah, The Straight Story is, like, so lovely.
Yeah.
It's so lovely. I really enjoyed watching it. Nothing cursed in. Actually, not a single haunted thing in that.
No.
Except for actually, there is one random woman who he encounters. Yes, who she has hit a deer like every day or something.
Yeah.
She's like, this is the fifth
where
deer
they come
this week.
From?
She has to drive. She has to commute every day, like, I don't know, 40 miles or something.
Yeah.
She hits a deer every day.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, she is cursed.
Yeah.
She's haunted.
And that feels like a very Lynchian, like, weird interactions with people in the middle
just
of the
just a random
country.
Woman. Yeah.
It's
great. Loved it. But yeah, this has been Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. We're here every second and fourth Tuesday here on WGXC from 7 8 p.m. Next time we'll be here talking about something else.
Yeah, who knows?
Who
we
knows?
Do have an Instagram, Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, where you can maybe we'll drop a little hint about what the next theme is.
Or you can give us some suggestions if you have anything you want to tell us. You can DM us, tell us what's going on with you.
Yeah.
We'll hear about it. Give us some movie recommendations. You know, we love to watch.
I would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, have a lovely evening.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.